This is a Doxcast, not an Argon Soxcast, or a Bendis and Loxcast. Now I'm hungry. This is a Doxcast. It's a nerdy Toxcast. Discuss a Moxcast with Rich Early and friends.
Welcome, everybody, to a really special episode of what we call the Doxcast. It's the Paradox Comics and Cards podcast, and we are loaded with special guests today, and we have got a really cool event that we're going to do. We are going to take our very first look at the Star Wars Legion core set that was sent out to by Fantasy Flight Games 2 weeks ahead of the release. My quick plug early, if you want to pre-order, you can still do that in Paradox Comics and Cards. I'm going to go around the room and introduce everybody, and then we'll introduce our special guest. So to my left is Leo Andre. Leo, tell us why you're cool.
I'm born that way. Have a Star Wars gaming podcast called the JodoCast. You can find us at JodoCast.com, JodoCast.com.
Which has an awesome story behind it. But Lance. Hi, Lance.
Hey, what's up, Richard?
Tell us who you are and why. What's up? Why you're cool.
Well, I don't know. I am the undead Viking of the board game world. I've been doing independent reviews for the last decade. If you search Undead Viking, you probably find me. I am not affiliated with the Undead Viking Mafia death metal band based out of Florida, however, so please don't send me emails. And recently, I actually work in the gaming industry with Tasty Minstrel Games. So
awesome.
There you go.
And you're no good to me because Fantasy Flight probably sell you free copies of this game. But next up is John Layton. And John, who are you and why are you cool?
I am John Lightnin, and I run D&D and Magic here and other events at Paradox. Woo! And I'm just a pretty big nerd for everything to board gaming.
Yes, he is.
Next up, we've got JJ Gordon. Hi, JJ.
Oh, hello, everybody. I'm excited to be here. Don't let my lack of facial hair hurt my my board game love and Star Wars love. Yeah. Very excited to be invited to be part of this tonight. I can't wait to probably lose, but I'm going to give it a fighting chance.
JJ, I'm going to put you on the spot in just a minute once we're done. But,
oh, please do.
Our last guest is Hot Cook, newest member of the Paradox staff. One of three new members of the Paradox staff. Hi, Hawk. There you go. All right. So, I don't blame you for being nervous.
The best color man
right
on Twitch.
So, yeah.
Well, I also don't have headphones, so no one can really
you won't be able to hear our guest. But what we're going to do, JJ is going to repeat everything that Alex says to you. All right. So, we're all here for Star Wars Legion, and let's introduce our guest of honor, Alex Davey. And if you guys all look at the, on your screen right now is the box, the core set for Star Wars Legion, and right there it says, Alex, it says your name right on the front of that box.
That's pretty cool, but they wouldn't spring for the spot glass, so. No, it's super exciting.
Hi, Alex, and welcome back to Paradox and the Doxcast. So I hope all is going well with you tonight.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
So real quick, tell us who you are and why you're cool, and then we're going to get this show on the road.
My name's Alex. I'm cool because I've been working on a bunch of really fun Star Wars miniatures games at Fantasy Flight for the last 5 years, and that's been quite a ride.
Awesome. Yeah, you. I mean, when I first became aware that you were designing Star Wars games for them, it was back on X-Wing, and we had you on a podcast and up here in person, and that was a ton of fun, so...
Yeah, and to think I might not be where I am if you hadn't sold me those packs of Magic cards way back in the day when I was 9 or 10 years old.
Yeah, that's the thing about Alex is I knew Alex, like, and that blew my mind when I heard you were the X-Wing designer, not because I didn't think you could, but because I no one famous comes out of here ever, and so, you know, that was really, really, really cool, and I mean, I've known Alex since he was a little kid. If I thought really hard, I bet I could come up with some embarrassing Star Wars stories, but I'm not going to do that.
So. Well, I remember actually way back in the day you schooled me on the correct pronunciation of executor.
Oh my God, that was one of my pet peeves. Everybody would say executor, and it drove me crazy. Anyway.
It is executor.
That was
your
comic guy from back in the day.
a pronunciation podcast. We throw move the box. We're just going to do word pronunciation. So anyway, Alex and JJ went to school together, so this is a reunion of sorts.
Fargo South High.
Yeah. In fact, I was just looking at Alex and I were part of a sketch comedy show where we played two French guys, and we got pelted with change during the
sketch. They made it hail.
They did. We wanted them to throw money, and we didn't think that they'd start throwing coins.
Surprisingly painful bit of theater.
May I ask what year you graduated?
2002.
I'm just wondering if my dad was still teaching there.
Who's your dad?
Well, Leo Meister.
Oh, absolutely. He directed me in a play.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
He had a wonderful beard as well.
Yes. Yes, he does.
Yeah.
Runs he's let it grow since he retired. But yes.
So, Alex and JJ, I have a challenge for you. And then we're going to open this thing up and get going. So... JJ is a Star Wars fan, but not a gamer that I'm aware of. Is that right, JJ?
You know, I'm very minimal. I play D&D on the weekends, but I'm not a heavy gamer. I've, of course, made my way through a couple rounds of Munchkin, King of Tokyo, but not a hardcore gamer at all. But I'm hoping to fix that.
All right, Alex. Your job is to sell this man a Corsair by the end of the night.
I was just going to say, we'll have you playing through 60-hour chit-based World War II simulation campaigns in no time.
Good.
get up my copy of Case Blue. Let's do this.
All right, everybody. You are tuned in to, not to listen to us, but to check out this great new game. So let's. Leo and John are our most well-prepared people for this thing. So you guys and Alex are going to take us through this. Alex, tell us about this cool box set.
Sure. The core set, I think, packs a lot of goodness in. We really tried to put as much into that box as possible. And the quality and quantity of the miniatures in particular, I think, is really cool. You get 14 stormtroopers, 14 rebel troopers, a couple of speeder bikes, an AT-RT, Luke, and Vader. So you get 33 models, miniatures, and... dice, movement templates, rule books, a bunch of tokens. You know we love tokens at Fantasy Flight.
So you were talking about how the figures and how you have to assemble them, because we were talking about assembly, and then just like how easy those things get put together.
Yeah, I've talked to some people have been turned off when I tell them that they use miniatures did not come pre-assembled like something like Imperial Assault did. But you know, these are really simple to put together. I mean, it's just you snap the arms in place in one little.
It's not a GW thing.
It's not a 10-piece little guy.
And then you glue your guy down to the base, and you're good to go.
Maybe Alex can answer because I was asking you. Like, is there in like, are you guys going to have interchangeable like weapons then later? I mean, because obviously you don't have to glue the weapon to the stormtrooper. Like later on, is there going to be like upgrades or something like that, or you could change, you know, to like a flame trooper or something? Or is that something that's in the future?
So you're going to get really, really sick of me saying this, but I can't answer that.
Oh,
now I can't talk too much about any sort of future plans or releases. But what I can do is sort of talk around that and say that the way that we've designed these kits is such that you don't really need to go hunting for extra parts. You get everything that you need in the box. Every option for building your squad comes in the box. So you don't have to build figures in different ways. You get, for example, in the Stormtroopers, you get the DLT-19 Stormtrooper, and you also get the rocket launcher stormtrooper, and so both of those options are available in the unit if you want to use it. You don't have to make any hard decisions about which figure you want to sculpt or how you want to approach that. And so that's kind of the route that we've taken for ease of use and accessibility versus some of the more like sprue based miniatures games.
Oh, okay. I gotcha. So without asking, I'll let somebody else talk here in a second. So, I mean, I realize it's really sensitive. So can you tell us about everything that's coming out for it in the future?
Let's break it down. Do you want through what, 2025?
Yeah. If you could just hold up a list to the camera and then just leave it there.
Yeah.
I just want to know when I can get my giant ad at. That's all I care about.
This is the question I get the most.
Selling popcorn buckets, $20. Hey.
This is the question I get the most, and it's probably been answered a ton, so forgive me, but these are 35 millimeter as opposed to 28. What went into the size decisions in the sizing in this game?
You know, one of the reasons that we wanted to go with the bigger size is just to give it more of a tabletop presence and to make it easier and more fun to paint. Scaling it up like that also lets you do some more dynamic poses. We've got the 27 millimeter bases, so you can have a little bit more creativity the sculpting department can exercise in terms of you know, how far apart the legs can be spread, and you know, we've got a crouching model, and we can do just more interesting things at that scale, I think is the primary reason.
Well, and I think these guys all look fantastic. Like, I was already impressed with all the minis that you guys had been putting out with Imperial Assault. And then these guys being scaled up just a little bit, there's just that much more detail in them and everything, and they just... I just really, really can't wait to get my own box to start playing with them all.
2 weeks! 2 weeks right here at Paradox. No. And just to back up one quick second, I want to make sure all of our Twitch listeners know, feel free to type questions in the chat, and we will try to pass them on when they're relevant. So, like, we did have one question of, like, can you tell us if there's a big release schedule for 2018? Is that even a spoiler, or... How aggressive will it be?
We're going to make a lot of stuff for Legion, and we're going to do it as fast as we can.
Okay.
That's not even out yet, and you guys already have four more expansions announced.
The AT-ST, right?
Well, that's coming out at launch, but after launch, there's General Veers, Princess Leia, Rebel Fleet Troopers, and Snow Troopers also.
So we got a Wookiee question too. So let's talk about factions. Like, how does this game break down into factions? I mean, is there an issue?
Might be two.
Yeah, there might be two. Thanks. But
no, there's one, and they split.
Yeah. So hit us with that info.
Well,
there's two. Yeah. All right, moving
there's
on.
Two.
All right, we got to get some dirt on this guy. JJ, you got some dirt on him so we can get some answers?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I haven't been given a free copy of this yet to play, so I'm going to give him that opportunity to text me with it.
We'll bring ours to Y94 tomorrow morning. What are you doing? All
right. Yeah. You know, beyond that, I will tell you this. Alex has been super creative since high school, so this is no surprise to me that he got into a field doing something like this, and I expect nothing less than excellence from here on out.
Ooh. High standards.
What if I told you it's just a B+?
You know, then I'd be like, oh, it's a classic Alex bait and switch.
So somebody's asking if we can pose the figures in different ways.
Well, did you tell them they're plastic men?
Yeah. Yeah. Can't really.
Well, the AT-ST can be posed a little bit, I believe. Can't it? Can it?
The AT-ST is insanely posable, actually. That thing has a ton of different articulating joints, and it can be placed in a lot of different positions. You can make those things really tall, turns out, if you stretch them all the way up.
Yeah, so how does something like that work with the... with the line of sight rules that Legion is going to be having? I mean, are you allowing just kind of however somebody poses that guy is that's the height and that's how that particular mini gets played?
I think within reason, and hopefully people won't do anything too crazy in terms of modding. For
all right, guys, got to stack like three little bricks on him so he goes as high as possible.
But you know, honestly, like there's such a pro and a con to like seeing versus being seen. The range of motion in the AT-ST is not so absurd that you can, you know, make it 10 feet tall or whatever. I don't think it's going to be a huge issue. If it becomes an issue, obviously that'd be something to address through tournament rules or organized play or that kind of thing. Uh-huh. So we will see what happens.
What about, and are you kind of taking the same approach too as far as like customizing bases, if that changes the unit's height at all? Or
You know, again, like the tournament document's going to contain some information about how to handle that stuff. The general rule is that if it's recognizably what it's supposed to be, uh-huh. and within, you know, a reasonable tolerance, we want people to be creative. We want people to exercise their hobby muscles and, you know, do cool stuff. So we don't want to put the kibosh on any of that. On the other hand, if it is causing problems in the tournament scene or something like that, I know the organized play department has always been very good at addressing that kind of stuff, but we tend to just do that on a case-by-case basis, sort of as it comes up. But yeah, there will be information about that kind of specific stuff in the tournament rules document when that comes out.
Cool. So, and for people listening who have no idea what me and Alex are talking about, in Legion, line of sight is determined by from the actual top of your mini. So so basically wherever the top of the mini is, that's where its line of sight starts, and that determines what it can actually see.
Correct.
That was actually one of the questions that just came about, yep. in Twitch chat was, where was line of sight measured from?
Yeah, it's basically the concept is the true line of sight, and it's essentially the top of a trooper's head, or the top of an AT-ST's head. And you kind of do that wargaming thing where you get down by the table and you squint, you look through one eye, then you have an argument with your friend about it.
How, when you designed this, how long did you envision a game would take?
It's a bigger game. You know, X-Wing you can play in an hour or less. This game, couple of hours. It's designed to have a more of an immersive kind of narrative experience. The battles are hopefully going to ebb and flow so it's a longer, crunchier game, 2-2.5 hours. You know, more or less depending on your play speed and experience level. But yeah, it's a big, full size game. That being said, we're hoping to have ways to play it, you know, on a smaller scale and with fewer points or more points, and people can pretty much do whatever they want with it once they have it. So if you want to play an all weekend battle with dozens and dozens of troopers, then the game does scale up or down quite well.
And you should buy all those extra
things. Yes, yes. Buy, consume, consume. No. You mentioned immersive and narrative. This is something that I just had a slight concern about when I was thinking about the game. So I see we have a Darth Vader figure. I see we have a Luke Skywalker figure. I put them in the battle. Does that mean Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker can get killed?
In Legion, my friend, models are never killed. They're merely defeated. I think if you'll consult the rule book, you'll find that to be the case.
Because, I mean, that was something, I mean, I guess it's all in terminology, but, so basically what you're saying is this is like A-Team fights. Nobody ever dies.
Exactly.
A-Team and G.I. Joe wars. You know?
It's non-canon, man. Just non-canon.
Yeah, no, I mean, Legion isn't really tied to story in the same way that some other Star Wars games are, or, you know, even games like Imperial Assault have missions and stakes and kind of a storyline. Legion's deliberately free from all of that because, one, it lets us kind of sandbox whatever we want, and two, it lets you kind of create the sort of battles that you want to using your imagination. And I can't wait to see what fans do in terms of campaigns and scenarios and that kind of stuff. And I know that we are just excited to see where people take this, because it's designed to pretty much be played anywhere on any sort of terrain you might have. It's got a very flexible rule set. So yeah, we'll just sort of see where people take it.
Yeah, this is kind of a cross. I mean, so obviously Warhammer 40K is sort of the gold standard usually depending on which edition is out of miniatures gaming, right? But this is, I mean, the more I learned about Legion, it's different. I mean, there are a lot of things that Fantasy Flight uniquely does with its miniatures games and games in general, and I feel like you've brought a lot of that to Legion. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's very true. We have there's a certain, I guess, house style, you might call it, to most Fantasy Flight games, and a certain design philosophy that we tend to we're not sort of slavishly beholden to any specific idea, but we do have things that we keep in mind in terms of accessibility, approachability. We like doing stuff with custom dice. Movement tools and templates have been really successful and fun component of our other miniatures games. So there was a chance to bring that into Legion as well. So I rolled with that. But it's just, you know, it's sort of like finding stuff that works and extrapolating and expanding on it. And what having custom dice and a very simplified range ruler and movement tools does is it lets people really get into the game very quickly. And in my experience, you don't lose a lot of tactical depth by missing out on some of that crunchiness that, you know, like a D20 or a D6 and a bunch of charts might bring to the table.
I like that word crunchiness. I'm a fan.
So since you mentioned the range ruler, can I just talk about how genius it is that the thing pops apart?
Yeah, they did a good job with that.
Because that's one thing I always hated about the X-Wing range ruler is, like, if you want to just check for range one, you got to worry about, you know, bumping into all these other minis all across the board and stuff, because the whole thing is, you know, range three.
Yeah, that's very true. And I know that one of the first things that a lot of people gets when they play X-Wing a lot is a set of, like, range one and range two rulers.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that going into Legion, we just definitely wanted that to be able to be broken down and transported, and also, you know, you can just use the length that you want to use versus having this whole, you know, giant unwieldy thing that you have to deal with.
So that sounds like a perfect example of things you've maybe learned from previous games. That's going to be one of my next questions. Was taking this history of FFG style and philosophy, like, what have you learned that you brought to the table with Legion? I mean, and I guess a little broader, what was the inspiration for Legion in conjunction with that question?
Sure. In terms of lessons learned, one of the big things that I learned working on X-Wing and then working on Armada is that if you want a game to have a lot of room to grow, you need to kind of build a lot of, like, levers and switches and buttons in the game design sense into the game. Simplicity is good, but you want to have the ability to make new units unique, to make new mechanics unique. And the keyword system in Legion lets you have a lot of flexibility in that regard. You can change up a few keywords, you can change up a couple of stats, and you can really have a very radically different unit that plays completely differently from another kind of unit. So that plus certain things like vehicle movement, custom dice with symbols that we can kind of apply to special effects. A good example of that is the dodge ability, the deflection that the Jedis have, where they can spend dodge tokens to reflect, you know, shots back at their attackers and get a higher, you know, a higher defense save. That's just a simple keyword, but it packs a ton of information into it, and we can use that keyword repeatedly where necessary. So that was a big thing, just giving it room to grow. And another thing that I learned from just minis games in general is that I do not like futzing with a ton of different models. It's kind of cumbersome to measure from to and from every single one. So I really wanted to figure out a way to simplify that system so you can just move one important mini and then the rest of the squad kind of coalesces around it. It's a small thing, but it is a time saver, and it does make the games quicker and a little less fiddly. So I'm pretty happy with how that turned out as well. In terms of what inspired Legion in general, there's probably a little bit of DNA in there from just about every game I've ever worked on or enjoyed. It's in some ways, it's kind of a Tarantino-esque mixtape where, you know, I took elements that worked and things that I liked and things that I came up with on my own and just kind of blended it all together. But the biggest thing was I wanted the commanders to really shine. I wanted it to feel character-driven.
wanted to feel like Star Wars, where, you know, important heroes really do turn the tide of battle. But I wanted to, you know, it needed to be a proper war game as well. So you needed a battlefield and units and different troopers. So, you know, I didn't want to zero in on heroes quite to the extent of Imperial Assault, but I also didn't want to make it this huge, faceless, you know, 8 or 15 millimeter like epic game, you know, like where you could recreate the Battle of Hoth or whatever. Mm-hmm. Because I think the heart of Star Wars is really those characters and commanders that can kind of drive the action. So that's kind of where the genesis of the game came from, just focusing on that. And from that, we kind of developed the whole command system and a lot of the strategy that goes into an individual Legion match.
I'm a really big fan of the command system. I think it's another thing that helps set this game apart from other war games like 40K or whatever, which Rich mentioned before, especially when you get troops out away from the commander and suddenly you're getting those random activations added into the game and you kind of get that fog of war effect where some of those troopers you may not be able to activate them at the most optimal time that you would want to.
Can you give us just a brief rundown of the command system for listeners who aren't familiar yet?
Yeah, sure. So one of the solutions that you have to solve for any war game or battle game is, you know, this stuff is happening, you know, story-wise or narrative-wise, is happening in real time. And everybody's doing everything at once. Of course, that doesn't really work on the tabletop. You know, I'm sure someone will eventually develop a real-time miniatures game, and it'll be delicious chaos. But if you're doing turn-based, you have to try to break things down and make it fair. And one of the ways that people do that is just to do alternate activation. You know, I choose a unit and go with it. You choose a unit and go with it. But that can be a lot of information to process. It can be the results can be very certain, and especially if, you know, I know that I'm going to have the first activation next turn, I can plan my turn accordingly. The command system, basically at the start of every round, each player submits a command card face down and then flips them over. And these cards determine a couple of things. They determine who gets the first activation, which is generally hugely important. But it also determines how many orders can be issued to units on the battlefield. And units that have been issued orders get to act whenever they want. When it's your turn to choose a unit, you can choose any unit with an order. Units that haven't been issued orders will be activated in random sequence. So what it's really trying to represent, and I'm glad you said the fog of war, is it's trying to represent just that. The commanders can influence the battle and make sure that you can activate the units that you want to when you want to, but you also have to balance that out with the need for speed and the need to go first, because generally speaking, the cards that are faster and allow you the first activation don't give you as much control over your army. So the hope was that would be a really interesting tactical experience and kind of shake up the usual back and forth paradigm of wargaming. So I'm pretty happy with how that plays out. It also lets you inject a lot of personality into commanders and their command cards, because you can do a lot of interesting effects with those cards.
So on the unique characters questions, we had a question in the chat about whether all unique characters will be commanders or if we'll see some familiar faces in other unit types.
Yeah, and specifically, this guy, one guy wants to know about Boba Fett. He's only here for Boba Fett information.
Boba Fett? Where? I would love to just spoil everything that I've been working on. I can't get too specific, but I will say that, like, we love iconic Star Wars characters, and, you know, we'll find a home for them.
If I could speculate for a second, and you don't have to confirm anything, obviously, but just to point out to our listeners, so there's different unit types in the game. You got your regular troopers, which are your core units. You've got your commanders, which we've been talking about. And then we've got vehicles like the speeders and the ATRTs, which are support units. And then there's also the heavy units, which are the AT-ST and the Snowspeeder. But there's another category of unit called Special Forces, which we've seen no units. There's been no units announced for Special Forces yet, so we have no idea what they're going to be. But if it was me, I think that would be a good place to put a unique character that's not a commander.
Just throwing it out.
You know, some of you might be really excited to hear about Boba Fett. What about Porkins? No, no response. Fine.
No C-3PO guys?
Yeah. Yeah. Where are my droids?
I mean, we could put Porkins in the game, but he'd have to cost like 500 points. I don't know. I don't know how to balance that.
Or his rules crash.
Oh, poor Porkins. JJ, what do you think so far?
So here's my first thought is, as a Star Wars fan, I am overjoyed to get into this kind of a battle type arena. I don't like the politics of Star Wars. My least favorite parts are when they're sitting and trying to debate stuff. I like when there's lasers going off. And it seems like this game is, you know, meant for people who enjoy those fun action sequences.
Yeah, we're saving the politics expansion for 25.
But you have just like senators sitting in chairs.
It's roll your dice to vote.
Was it hard to get Laura Dern to sit to sculpt her face?
That likeness meeting was rough. That was no.
It's the trade negotiation expansion. It comes out in November.
It should have hot laser death. And I am in full agreement with JJ. You want lightsabers. You want blasters. You want
Luke Skywalker to go have sword battles with all... Oh, never mind. I'm
Force powers.
Yes.
That's what you want.
What else do we need to talk about?
Weird vehicles shooting huge lasers.
Oh. Hawk wants to know about paints.
Yes.
That's it. Just paints.
Well, like, paints. Well, what kind of paints are going to work well?
Yeah, what works well?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, I was actually going to ask that. Thank you for reminding me. I mean, obviously, you know, these are meant to be painted, like you said. You're making them a little bit larger, so, you know, it isn't as daunting as far as the task at hand. But is FFG or, you know, whatever, Asmodee or whatever, going to, you know, I don't know, have their... They're probably not going to have their own paint line, but are they going to... suggest a paint line, or are they going to do anything in conjunction with them at all as far as that? I mean, I don't know, or is it just people can do what they want as far as whatever, however they're going to paint it?
Well, I'll tell you one thing that we have done is we've collaborated with Sarastro Painting, which is a series of really phenomenal YouTube videos, and we provided him with all of the initial release models for Legion. And he has done an absolutely superb job painting those up and putting together detailed step-by-step tutorials with paint recipes and with all kinds of fantastic tips and advice for new or experienced painters. And so, yeah, I would say go on YouTube, check those out. They're really, really good.
A couple of questions too that have been coming in are about organized play, and like one of the things that I am aware of is, so we've been through X-Wing, Armada, Imperial Assault, and now Legion as far as Star Wars miniatures games, not to mention all the other FFG games. And one of the things that does really well, I play the Arkham Horror LCG, and I love the unique stuff that comes. And if you played Store Champs or things like that, you get all kinds of cool stuff in all these things. But the organized play program that you guys have gotten, I don't know how much you're involved in this, but for Legion, I've never seen you guys this aligned on organized play before. I commend you greatly, and maybe you could answer these questions a little bit with some information.
Sure, yeah, I know we've worked really closely with organized play. We want this to be a really interesting experience for people. We want to support friendly local gaming stores and offer cool experiences that are more than just tournament play. So we're hoping that, you know, leagues and you know, different types of missions and battles will be popular. We're definitely branching out a little bit in terms of what we're offering with Legion as compared to some of our more sort of Swiss pairing tournament focused games. So again, I'm not sure how much detail I can get into before we really announce those formats fully, but I can tell you that I'm excited about the variety and about what's coming.
Yeah, okay, well, now you put me on the spot by gesturing at me.
I did, sorry. You always had more questions, so.
I think the thing I'm most excited about, and I think it was something that was maybe not necessarily announced, but referred to kind of obliquely in one of your, in the actual organized play announcement article. They, you know, they said something along the lines of, you know, go out to your store and whether you're going to play a 800 point skirmish or engage in some campaign play, you know, with your friend, you know, it's going to be awesome. Or yeah, I don't remember that, but just the fact that campaign play was something that was mentioned kind of got me excited, because I think that idea intrigues me a lot versus just straight up skirmish battles, but kind of having something, I don't know, maybe similar to like the Corellian conflict thing they have with Armada or something like that would be really cool, I think, with this game.
Yeah, we're very open to that idea. I mean, this is a game that is not as laser focused on just the sort of deathmatch kind of experience. You know, all of the games of Legion, even if you're just playing the straight up game out of the core set, they're very objectives focused. You can't win games just by destroying the enemy. You have to achieve things. I think, you know, in terms of Star Wars lore, the Rebellion's fighting this very mismatched guerrilla operation against a huge and powerful empire. So, you know, battles of attrition don't make a ton of sense. Generally speaking, the Rebellion has a very specific objective, as do the Imperials, who are trying to achieve these larger goals of finding and eradicating the greater Rebel Alliance. So in terms of that, the game is already very much structured to have a little bit more going on than just trading gunfire across the table with tiny soldier men. So I think that the system itself hopefully will lend itself very well to that kind of campaign play and to more, you know, robust experiences that you can maybe play over the course of a few weeks. So yeah, I know that I'm just trying not to blow the lid on any of the but yeah, it's gonna be exciting. They've got a lot of cool stuff planned. A
couple of really quick things. Somebody has pointed out that the Senate mechanic was part of the old CCG.
Yeah,
and I know you're an old CCG fan player. So storage.
You can do anything in that game. That game was crazy.
One of the things that's being asked is about storage about the game. Can we see the divisions in this box? And then
I gave them a look at it already.
Okay,
yeah, perfect. John held it up to the camera there.
And yeah, I mean, and then a lot of the questions we're getting are, you know, like, when are Palpatine and Royal Guards coming? Will there be different versions of characters? You know, it's like, he can't tell us that, yeah. So.
So one thing I've noticed so far, at least with all the expansions that have come out and been announced so far, is you're keeping a balance of upgrades between the two factions. So whatever upgrades the Stormtroopers come with, the Rebel Troopers have been coming with the same upgrades. And so which means, at least so far, if a person wants to focus on one faction, it's something they can do, whereas there's been some other games where I think people have felt kind of pushed into buying into other factions or something like that they weren't interested into to get those you know, a certain juicy upgrade card maybe that they needed. And now, is that something that you see continuing into the future still, where you're keeping the upgrades kind of the same across the factions? Or, I mean, at least for the non-faction limited ones, you know.
Right. Yeah. No, that's very deliberate. You know, it's a big investment to get and paint a whole Legion army. And, you know, we don't want you to have to go buy any Rebel scum if you're a diehard Imperial player. You know, support the evil Empire if you just want to play Rebel. So, yeah, there won't be any upgrade cards that you need to go out and buy a, you know, another pack for. We're hoping that, you know, within, you know, they might not all, both factions might not get everything at exactly the same time, just due to release schedule. But if something shows up in a, you know, in an Imperial box, it will show up in the Rebel faction as well shortly thereafter or at the same time. Mm. So yeah, there'll be no need to kind of go out and hunt down cards from other factions that you're not interested in playing.
Awesome.
That being said, you should buy and play everything.
Yeah. I've already got one of everything pre-ordered.
Have I mentioned that pre-orders are still available at Paradox Comics? So when you make unique characters as commanders, like, one of the issues is always the balance of the cost of those characters. So, like, one of the questions we got, for instance, is, like, Vader is apparently the cost of about 1/4 of an army. Is that, how much of a concern is that, or how does that factor into, you know, army building?
Yeah, I mean, points balancing is tough. That's one of the toughest things that that you have to do as a developer. And for new games, it's even harder because your playtester resources are limited. Your understanding of the game is not as great because you're designing the game as you're trying to balance it. So it's always tricky. Of course, we played hundreds and hundreds of games to try to get it right. And the challenge with something like Darth Vader is you can't, you know, put down an anemic Lord of the Sith. He's got to do what he does on screen, which is just wreck everyone's face 24/7. So the trick is, you know, trying to find that balance of an appropriately thematically powerful character that feels right, feels like Darth Vader, feels like someone who can take on a huge number of enemies at once and not only survive but prevail. But you also have to make sure that he's not so powerful that it feels pointless to play anybody else or to pit normal soldiers against him. Vader is, you know, going to hit harder than anything in the game. He's incredibly durable. He's harder to destroy than anything in the game.
Wait. Defeated.
Defeated. You can't destroy it. You can't destroy Vader. It's just not possible. But yeah, so it's one of those things where it's a delicate and quasi-scientific but largely just sort of experiential kind of thing. And the goal, of course, is to have a viable, powerful, fun character that doesn't totally dominate the game. So I hope and think that we're in a pretty good place with the initial characters, and we're just going to keep trying to achieve a good level of balance going forward, and also a good level of just sort of interesting design. You know, we want to capture the essence of those characters in the game as much as possible and make them really feel like the characters that you see on the screen and get to know in the universe.
I would imagine it gets a little easier the more pieces there are, because the holes start to appear between the value of this character and that character, and so that starts to give you a better idea. So you're probably in kind of a tough spot right from the beginning until you get kind of a landscape of values.
Yeah, and then one of the things, you know, of course, that we do is we design well ahead of what's actually released, you know, so
I hope so. You're not working on the April releases right now, are you?
What are the April releases?
Yeah.
I have a question, and this is maybe a little bit, troublesome. So I know a lot of people that are huge into 40K, you know, and that's their thing. So, and obviously, you know, in a perfect world, you know, there is no competition, you know, everybody plays what they want to play and whatever. But obviously, I mean, this is, you know, a heavily thematic, futuristic laser battle, you know, game, which is what, you know, technically kind of what 40K is, you know, but obviously it's got a steeper learning curve, I believe, and things like that. So what is this game gonna bring to the table for a tabletop miniatures game? Because, you know, as Rich said earlier in the stream, you know, 40K is like this big giant monolith. I mean, it's the gold standard. It's been that way for decades. And maybe you can obviously, you know, coexist with it. But I mean, what does this have that you think that you're going to surprise like those hardcore 40K players with? What that's going to make them want to come over here? Besides the theme, obviously the theme's going to bring them in, but with the game and everything like that, what do you think?
Well, I think it's a very specific gameplay style. It's very much an evolution of the kind of miniatures games that we've been making at Fantasy Flight, which kind of have their own distinct play style. And it's really like if you are a fan of X-Wing or Armada, or even, you know, going way back to Dust Warfare, there's a lot of stuff in Legion that's going to be recognizable to fans of our existing games. So that's one of the big audiences for this game is people who already know what we do and like it and want more of it, or they want, you know, a hobby game version of it or a larger Ground Wars version of it. So that's a big part of it. The other thing is it's a different sort of scale and experience. You don't need an enormous number of figures to play Legion. It's designed so that you can play with, you know, between 20 and 30 models and have a pretty full game experience. So it's a bit of a smaller game. It's a little bit less massive in that respect. So I think it's got its own niche, and I think it's got its own, and the experience is of course its own thing. So I think hopefully that's just, you know, a case of it being able to do its own thing without having to worry about whatever else is going on in the minis gaming world.
One of the questions too is about the mechanics of the game. We have touched on a few, but already do you feel like there are any mechanics that are overpowered or underpowered, or like how is balancing the mechanics of different races and units and things like that? How's that going?
I mean, I think it's going really well. Like, again, I wish I could share with you some of the things that are coming out, but yep. we've really found a lot of fun ideas for future units and ways to flesh things out. The core stuff is the sort of building blocks of the game. You know, Rebel Troopers, Stormtroopers, they're very functional. They're very kind of core unit type of things, and that's, you know, that's necessary sort of for the foundation of your battle line. But we get to do the really wild, wacky, fun stuff that Star Wars is chock full of with some of those, you know, special forces units or support units or various other things. So yeah, I think it's the real thing is just like we're trying to have each faction have its own kind of feeling to it. The rebels are a little bit more reliant on trickery and mobility. The Empire has much higher defense and sort of raw firepower. So we just sort of try to carry that theme out throughout all the stuff that's coming. And so that's definitely something to look forward to down the line. It's just some real unit diversity and some very interesting mechanics.
I love questions like, what were they thinking with exhaust weapons? They seem like a lot of work for not much reward. I love when these quote, you know, thanks.
they're tricky to use, but they're much stronger than other weapons, and it does give us another lever to pull. You know, it gives us the ability to create mechanics in the future that make recovery actions a little easier, or, you know, you can do things like support those kinds of weapons and play styles with various things. So again, when I was talking about, you know, having different levers to pull, that is a mechanic that's going to allow us to do a lot of things that having a weapon that just is always at the ready doesn't allow you to do. And, you know, hopefully we get the balance of that right. But mechanically, what that lets you do, and you can't rely on every single turn.
along these lines as well. There are a lot of rules in a new game. One of the things that we've run into over the years is that one definitive source for finding all the rules. So one of the good questions that came in is, how early can we expect an FAQ? Can we have an FAQ on March 22nd that's as comprehensive as it can possibly be?
Well, I will say this. We've tried to make the rules reference extremely comprehensive. So in a way, we have attempted to kind of account for, hopefully, almost every question that people will have. The FAQ is for that stuff that we didn't think about. So it's going to require the game to be out for a little while and for, you know, questions to be asked with frequency before we can deliver that. If we knew all the answers to the questions that people were going to have, we would have put those into the rules reference already. I'm sure we've missed some stuff, but we'll definitely address that as soon as we can.
When your exponential level of playtesters start playing the game 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, and that's a really key thing. We talk about this a lot. My brother in particular get really upset if there's a Magic Gathering card that wasn't maybe tested enough. And I would say, well, like, it's one thing when that group of 20 people are testing it, and it's another thing when, you know, thousands and thousands of players get their hands on it. So, like, it'll be really interesting when this thing gets in the wild in 2 weeks to find out what you did wrong. I mean, right? Like,
oh, man, Rich.
No,
I'm going to defend Alex. Because, as I said, I work for a board game publisher, and that's a rough comment.
I'm sorry, Alex.
You're not ready for my army of Vaders? Yeah. Like, just four Vaders on the table.
Right off the bat, there's a shocking lack of reference to Life Day. like a ceasefire, maybe, that I think you're going to have to fix right off the bat, Alex. God.
That'll be in the Lumpy expansion.
Lumpy and Itchy, they're coming with the rest of the Wookiee world. Oh, I'm sorry, I've said too much.
There was another good question about design here, going back a little bit. Was a lot of this design top-down, where you had the characters and then you fit their mechanics to the characters? Or did you come up with abilities and then fit the characters to the abilities that you created?
I would say it was probably more of a top-down approach. One of the things that we did very early on is kind of plan out the first couple of years of the line. So we figured out the scale. We figured out roughly how many miniatures in an army, what the sort of, you know, who we wanted to bring out when.
Can you share that with us?
So, you know, we knew who was coming, and so it's also just easy to get inspiration from the films, from those characters, and that really leads a lot of the design. That being said, there's also some stuff that you add in the design process because you need it. Like you may have had a cool idea for a character, but maybe he's not working. Maybe there's weaknesses to the way that functions. So you will definitely start adding abilities and statistics and that kind of thing during playtesting as well. You may have a concept that changes radically on the tabletop because it's just not working the way you envisioned it. So it always starts with kind of a vision from the top down, but it will change radically over the course of design based on how.
There he is.
So in your designing, what made you guys decide to give stormtroopers the precise keyword? Was that like just supposed to be like a cruel joke or?
Well, you know, only Imperial stormtroopers are the last ones that are that.
So we've had Alex for about an hour, minus our short internet outage, so I don't want to keep him too much longer. Can we maybe, can we go around with a final question real quick? And then I've just got a couple of one or two short, big picture questions I'd like to ask. So, Leo, you got
I just got my stormtrooper question out.
No, all right.
Hey, not me.
The precise question. Lance?
Well, I guess, I mean, obviously, like, this is, you know, it's Luke and it's Vader, so we're right there in, you know, the New Hope, you know, Empire Strikes Back era of the game, which
you
is
can't
cool.
Answer this question.
I'm not going to ask the question you think I'm going to ask. Just relax for a moment. One, actually, it's a two-part question. And, you know, it's like you said you kind of like looked out for 2 years or whatever. So I'm not going to guess about that, but I want to know who's like your go-to favorite Star Wars character that isn't already in this core box.
Oh,
it's
man.
BB-8.
I'm
very partial.
BB-8? Yeah.
I'm very partial to Lando Calrissian.
Oh, attaboy. Do you remember
back in the old days, Alex, when I didn't play the Star Wars CCG, but I would walk by when you guys were playing and say, you guys are all lucky I'm not playing my Lando deck today.
Yes, I do remember that.
Yeah, there you go.
All right,
did you have a Lando deck?
No.
All right. But then I guess my big question is that I mean this is with what FFG does is they do like they almost it's like a subscription, right? I mean it just seems like they have like regular releases at a regular period of time or whatever.
Yep.
So I mean just ballpark figure. I mean this is for me, but also everybody who's listening to this. If somebody just wanted to, like, you know, obviously the core game is, I think it's $100, right, if I remember correctly?
$89.99 okay. Or $71.99 on pre-order at Paradox
Now, that's a deal.
And then the four expansions that come out in April, how much are those? Since, you know, I just, and this is also to help out the stream a little bit. What are, you said you pre-ordered them. What are they?
Yeah,
what
so,
are
like,
they?
So like the, well, there's one, well, there's expansions coming out with the core set,
yeah.
Too.
So how much are the expansions? All told?
Expansions, I think I got them all for, I think at retail it's like about $250 or something.
Yeah,
like
then
that.
The map is 20%, so I think that's what we were doing.
All right, so, okay. Is that indicative of like every like 3-4 months? I mean releases. I mean you're going to be dropping because that's not really all that much money. Because I watch people walk in and buy, you know they pay $25 for a single figure for a Warhammer army. You know, so I mean if you're dropping a couple $100 but you're getting a ton of units, that's not that bad of a deal, honestly. I mean, is that kind of like what the plan is? I realize you can't give me specifics. I'm just wondering how much is this going to hurt my pocketbook over the next year? Is what I'm more concerned about.
Because like a Stormtrooper expansion,
yeah. I mean, we're certainly planning 25. A steady stream of releases. The prices will be in line with what you've seen already, and I, you know, the units that are available at launch really run the gamut. You've got everything from you know a couple speeder bikes to an AT-ST. So. Pretty much most future releases will fall in that range and will be priced the same way. So you can quite easily extrapolate that a box of, you know, new troopers will cost the same as a box of rebel troopers or what have you.
Perfect.
So yeah, I mean, the content is going to be steady. And the hope is that people will, you know, get whatever they want to customize their army. You know, it's pretty easy to get to 800 points with just the core set or a couple core sets and some expansions. So it's really a matter of, you know, when new stuff comes out, we want people to be excited about it and to want to add it to their arsenal so that when they do build their armies, they have more variety and they can try different strategies and then the game stays interesting and alive in that respect. And one of the things that I'm really pleased with is that, Just buying a new commander for like I think it's $12 or $13 completely changes your list building potential. I mean the difference between Luke Skywalker and Leia or Vader and Veers, you're going to have very very different power levels, strategies, and armies with those commanders. And so one of the cool things about the way that's structured is that these very small financial investments will give you a ton of different gameplay options and flexibility. So I'm hoping we just continue to do a lot of different commanders and provide that for people as the game goes on.
All right, I'm gonna ask one last thing. I know. So I know you said you're gonna be at UK Game Expo. I might actually be there, but are you gonna be at like Gen Con?
I don't believe I'll be at Gen Con. I will be at Adepticon and I will be at the UK Games Expo.
Yeah.
I'll be at Gen Con. You can come see me.
Okay. Okay, well, if you're not going to be at Gen Con, can you tell me what you're going to release for Legion at Gen Con?
Yeah, no. All right. So before we go to the other side, and John, I just want to follow up on Lance with just a couple things. So one thing as a store, from a store and a player perspective, you know, I'm curious if you've learned anything from the longer running games, like say X-Wing as an example, right, where you've released a wave of X-Wing, every three or four, not you personally, every three or
I
four.
I actually do. I go house to house.
Yeah.
Pedaling on his little bike.
Yeah. So tired.
But,
so tired.
But the question is, you know, the shelves populate and the both at the store and at home. Any lessons that you can take from the release schedules you've had before that you're applying to the release schedules for Legion?
You know, I think we did learn some things from our previous games. I mean, the Legion's launching strong with a lot of content right away, which I think is important. You know, when we did Armada, for example, it was just the core set for quite a while. I think Rune Wars had the same issue. So one of the nice things about the Legion schedule is that we're trying to get a bunch of stuff out as quickly as we can so that it's a complete and very robust gaming experience right out of the gate. Obviously, it's not going to be just a fire hose of releases for the entire life of the game, but we do want it to be steady. We want it to, you know, we want the game to be reinvigorated frequently. So that's kind of what we kept in mind when we were determining the release schedule and stuff. A lot of that stuff is you know, not my department either. You know, that's a much higher level decision between production and marketing and that kind of thing. But I'm very happy with the plan that we have in place. A lot of the things that we're doing with Legion, I think, are really geared towards its success. So I'm really happy about that.
And the last part of that is you're filling a niche in Star Wars games that doesn't exist.
Right.
X-Wing gave you the dogfighting. Armada gave you the fleet battles. Imperial Assault kind of gave you the small scale. Now you've got the big scale here. But do you worry, even as a designer, about how many Star Wars games there are? And, you know, if you move people from Imperial Assault to Legion, or you move people from Legion to even Destiny or things like that, like do you worry about that stuff, or you just got to make the game and the that's that, you know?
You know, I mostly just make the game, but I will say, like, having gone to Star Wars Celebration and seen the just jaw-dropping, mind-melting variety of Star Wars products that exist in the world, it's not a license that I have any worry about in terms of whether people will be, you know, interested in it or not. And in terms of Legion, I think it's offering something new. You know, I think it's going to appeal to hobby gamers, and it's not something we've really done at FFG before. And it's you know, the gameplay is one thing, and it's very important, and I think it's a very fun and engaging game. But, you know, equally important is the hobby aspect of things, because painting your own army, customizing it, playing on handmade terrain, on really cool battlefields, it provides this kind of immersion that that other games just don't. You know, it's the only reason that people spend absurd hours and large sums to play these games, because they really do bring something that other games don't. And that is kind of a special thing. I mean, that's one of the reasons that I got into miniatures gaming and into my job in the first place, is I walked by the old Phoenix Games in Minneapolis, and the late grade Phoenix Games, and I saw this huge siege being played out through the window, and there were just, you know, hundreds of models and a big castle, and it was just the friggin' coolest thing I'd ever seen. So I was hooked, and I you know, I dabbled in minis games growing up, but that was, you know, in early college, I totally got sucked in by that. So the spectacle and the creativity aspect of it is huge, and I think that you pair that with Star Wars you know, you got a stew going.
Hmm. All right, John.
It's something that I've been interested in, and I saw some chat about it as well, so I'm on the topic of terrain. So we have the barriers in the core set here. Is there plans to include more terrain in future products, or is that mostly going to be a fan-based, fans to acquire them?
Obviously, at the start of the game's launch, it will be really helpful to sort of supplement those barricades with other terrain. We want to support this game in every way that we can, and that's about as specific as I can get, unfortunately. I know I'm doing a lot of that, but that's just the way this goes.
All right, JJ.
All right. So, and you kind of touched on this a little bit, Alex, but designing a game for Star Wars must be a daunting task because you're not going to please everybody from the get-go, right? So my curiosity is this, is in a world where obviously Star Wars fans are no longer relegated to a basement and a VHS copy of something that they happened to get from an uncle years ago. You know, this game doesn't look like it was dumbed down at all. Was there any pressure to make it maybe a little, you know, more family friendly or easier to pick up at one point that you guys obviously fought back against to say, no, we want to put out this product specifically?
You know, fortunately, there really wasn't that struggle or that conversation. And I think the reason for that is, one, the vision going into this game was that it would be a more advanced kind of hobby game and would be kind of a bridge for people who have never played that kind of thing, but also appeal to, you know, veteran wargamers. But I think the biggest thing is that we already have a really phenomenal, easy to pick up, easy access game with X-Wing. I mean, that's the game that you can teach to your, you know, to your 8-year-old or even your 6-year-old, and you can learn that game in 5 minutes, and you know, your investment is just a handful of ships. So that has been hugely successful for us. And rather than try to recreate that, we really felt with Legion we had an opportunity to do something we hadn't done before, and to do this more complicated game. I hope that it will appeal to people who haven't played something so you know, large and immersive before, because I have tried to make the rules easy to grasp and simple and hopefully elegant, but also tactically deep. But you know, we definitely didn't. We didn't have the super, super, super casual, never played a board game in their life kind of people in mind when we put this thing together.
Well, we'll see how easy you made it as I fumble my way through it. Like a stormtrooper entering a rebel ship.
We'll be sure to give you the rebels then.
That's why he's here. Hawk, do you have a question?
I'm sure it's in the rulebook, but is it really a one name character per army? Well, like, in terms of, like, I can't take more than one Vader, per se.
Yeah, you can't. So there's a little dot next to any card that is unique. So you'll notice that with Luke and Vader, they have that little dot. And that applies not only to named characters, but also anything that we want to limit to like one per army. So, yeah, you can't just field 6 Darth Vaders.
Cancel my pre-order.
as lucrative as it would be for us for people to buy 6 core sets, you got to keep within the theme of things.
You're getting a lot of heat for not going to Gen Con, by the way, in the chat. So
I've been to Gen Con every year for the last, gosh, I don't even know, 6 years?
Yeah. It's so nothing year, like yeah. It used to be. It's almost, if I didn't have to work, I wouldn't go. It's not, that sounds elite. That sounds awful, right? I mean, Gen Con's just
that's why he's
now.
Here. No,
there will be Fantasy Flight folks at Gen Con. My colleagues from the Minis department will certainly be there representing. We divided the labor a little bit. Like I said, I'm going to Adepticon and the UK Games Expo, and someone's got to, you know, make the donuts.
Keep
the game going. So
let's do a little housekeeping and then wrap this up with a personal question a little bit. So the game releases in 2 weeks, Thursday, March 22nd. Meantime, you can come here. You can go if you're probably, there might be people watching all over the country find your local game shop that's got the demo and go check it out. We'll have our demo up front starting tomorrow. So if you come by, a lot of my employees will stare at you and say, I don't know what you're talking about or how to play it, but here you go. But it's going to be there. So that's 2 weeks from now.
Way to do your part.
Exactly. So, well, we're getting there. Shut up, you. Yeah, so. But, you know, and like here, like a lot of places, you can pre-order the entire thing. Stop by the shop or call. We'll take care of you, and hopefully you'll be in line right behind JJ.
Yep.
Lastly, the way to find Paradox, we do this as a podcast. We record live. We post them on Twitch we post them on iTunes every Monday. So this will also come out in audio form, and we'll let you know when that happens. And you can find us it's ParadoxCNC.com is our website, or Paradox Comics and Cards on Facebook, or the old-fashioned phone is still there, too. Alex, how do people reach or follow or find you if they need to?
I'm a bit elusive. I'm not on the Twitters or the Instagrams or anything like that.
Didn't you hear it was going to be an Adepticon and UK Game Expo? Yeah, yeah.
But you can certainly contact me through Fantasy Flight. I am on Facebook. I'm around at almost all of our big events, Worlds and
the
big and stuff.
Yeah.
And I follow various feeds and stuff. So I can be found, and if you do find me, I'm generally very happy to answer questions that people have and interact with people. So,
Here's my closing question to you, basically. I've known you forever, like we said earlier, and I've had these experiences as a comic retailer where I've gotten to go to, like a comics pro convention or behind the scenes at something or other and meet somebody cool or whatever. But the thing is, though, like, Alex is just a person. He's just like all the rest of us. And that becomes really, you said, elusive. It becomes really elusive when you're a fan of the game. Alex, there are people out there who you seem larger than life to, and I've had that experience where I've met people who I've thought were larger than life. And you're just people. So given that, looking back on growing up as a kid, as a gamer, now being this lead designer, like, how cool is this to have your name on the front of this box and know that people are playing this game that you designed? Like, how rewarding is that, or does that not quite sink into you as just a normal guy?
It's super cool. It's still kind of unreal. It's becoming more real daily, and I'm sure that it'll finally fully hit me when the game actually comes out. But yeah, this is not what I expected to be doing for a career at all. It is a passion of mine. I've been, I've loved games from a very, very early age. So it's a total, it's the weird fulfillment of a dream I wasn't necessarily even sure that I had. And I feel incredibly lucky to be able to go to work and be creative and get to do this really cool stuff for a living. So that's just awesome. And everything else, visibility to fans and stuff, that's really cool. But for me, the exciting thing is I just get to create this stuff and send it out into the world, and that's just hugely, hugely rewarding.
Puts his gold shoes on one at a time, just like the rest of us.
Exactly.
Alex, thanks a lot for the extra time. Thanks everybody in the room for joining us. And again, if anybody did jump in with one last question, that's cool. One of the questions we did get is Paradox taking part in release weekend stuff? Yeah, FFG has got an absolutely great plan for us. So the demo is available now. You're more than welcome to come down. We will finish getting it put together. Hawk will finish getting it put together. And we will be here. A lot of us will be here to teach you how to play. Over release weekend, FFG's got a lot of great plans. You can actually help determine whether Paradox will be an Imperial or Rebel base by the end of launch weekend. So just stay tuned on Facebook and our website, and we'll have all details for what we're doing there. So, Alex, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for – sorry we kept you a little bit long and that the internet died. So.
No worries.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon on all the different places that everybody in this room talks to people on. So, later.
We're probably going to mute the stream, but we will be still be playing a game tonight.
Oh, yeah, yes. If you want, if you're watching, you want to stick around, the guys are going to play about every other Thursday we play do streaming board games, so we thought it was appropriate to get this put together and play. So stick with us, and we will play soon. Yep. So
good luck, JJ.
Thank you.
This was a DoxCast. Hope you think it rocks cast. Oh, look at the clocks cast. Until next time.